Okay, Shavuos is around the corner. We're now within the Shleishes Mehagbala, the Kidashtem Hayoyim Machar. We're during a very holy period of time. No one says Tachlin. Can you imagine? There's no fights in shul. People are going out of their mind. Come to shul. They can't fight about Tachlin. Okay, Akdamas. Akdamas goes back over 1,000 years. Believe it or not, Akdamas, there are different legends, different stories exactly how Akdamas came to be. They all border upon the same idea. There was a period of time, approximately 1,000 years, about a generation before the Crusades, the First Crusade. The First Crusade took place in the year 1096, 1096 to 95. So it appears shortly before that period of time. Now, how do I know shortly before the period of time? Right away, jump in. Who's the author of the Akdamas? Rabbi Meir Bar Yitzchak Shliach Tzibur. Shatz. And in fact, he signed his name in the Akdamas. Akdamas has the acronym, the Akdamas. We have Aleph Beis. You go through the Aleph Beis twice, if I'm not mistaken. And after it says the acronym is Rabbi Meir. It's even more. It's Rabbi Meir. I'll come to it a little bit later on. I wrote it down exactly, the acronym, but he mentions his name, Rabbi Meir Bar Rabbi Yitzchak Shliach Tzibur. Rabbi Meir Bar Yitzchak, we know, had a son whose name was Yitzchak. Obviously, he was born after the death of Rabbi Meir's father. He named his son Yitzchak. We know that this Yitzchak, his name was Yitzchak Bar Rabbi Meir, and he was killed during the First Crusade. Okay, he was one of the victims. He was an extremely holy person, and he is one of the people that were killed. And we referred to him, that group in one of the keynotes on Tisha B'Av. So, if his son was killed in 1096, and we assume his son must have been an adult, a mature adult, 30, 40, 50 years old, whatever it was, and his father was the famous Rabbi Meir Shliach Tzibur, so we know approximately that it took place, it must have taken place in the year probably 1050, something along those lines, a little bit earlier, give and take. Now, what is the story? So there's a lot of legend. It's not documented, it's very hard to find exactly what happened, and some things sound very bizarre to us. It appears that on the other side of the Sambatoin River, Sambatoin, do we know... Sambatyon. Do we know where that is? Exactly. No one really knows exactly where it is. There's a legend about this river. It's a magical river. One thing that Chazal tell us about this river, it only rests on Shabbos for 18 hours. Erev Shabbos Chatzos, the rivers become calm in honor of Shabbos, and they remain calm until Motzei Shabbos. During that period of time, it's possible to travel on the waters. Yes. The waters are calm enough where you can actually go on a ship, go on a canoe, you can swim, you can do something. But during the rest of the week, the waters are so turbulent, it is physically impossible to travel these waters. So somehow there was some community on the other side of this, the Sambatyon River, and legend has that these people, okay, were from the Aseres Hashvatim. And in this village, there was a king, a Goyish king, and there was a priest, and the priest had a Jewish assistant who was being trained in the ways of magic and sorcery. And at some point in time, the Jew sensed that he was destroying his neshama, and he rebelled against his master, against the Koimer, the priest. And the master was very disturbed because he needed the assistant for whatever reason. And he decided he's going to take revenge against all of the Jews. And how did he take revenge against all the Jews? He cast these magical spells. Like I told you, this stuff is way over my pay grade. And he would touch their nose or touch their forehead, and the people would very calmly go home and lie down and die.
Even introduction to the Tikkun Leil
has this whole story. There are different versions of the story, or whatever it is. And things got worse and worse. 663 people died. They went to the king. The Jews went to the king to complain. This person has to stop. The king said to the Jews, I fear for my own life. I don't know what to do. We'll meet with the Koimer and we'll have a debate. and we'll have some debate. I'm giving you a long time to prepare. Find for yourself a person that can debate, can deal with this Komer, this priest, and whoever wins, if you will prevail in the debate, then we'll put the Komer to death, something along those lines. The people living in this isolated part of the world, on the other side of the Sambathyon River, these people, part of the group of the Aseres HaShvatim, did not have anyone qualified to debate with this Koimer, so they sent Rabbi Don. It seems like his name was Rabbi Don, over to the other side of the Sambathyon, to a community, to find in Varmiza and Worms, to find a person that can assist them in the year. Let's say it's assumed it's 1050. And he arrived and he told them the situation, and it seems that he had to be Machal. I don't know, Machal Shabbos, not Machal Shabbos, to travel, or he used the shame, Kabbalah, who knows, to fly, whatever these things are. And they said that it's Sakon of a Klal Yisrael, and they sent Rabbi Meir, the Shliach Tzibur. This is a bittersweet story, because time was of the essence, and Rabbi Meir was unable to write a get for his wife. That's what it says. Because it was say, how do you travel immediately? How do you even travel on Shabbos? And also, but the consequence was, it was a suicide mission. To a certain degree, he would not be able to come back. That's what it, again, it was all legend. This is all like bizarre as it gets. And he could not be able to, only one way, Rabbi Don, who came to get him, never went back. And Rabbi Meir, who traveled to the other side of the Sambathyon, also never came back. And each of them did not write a get for their wives, which meant they were agunas for the rest of their lives. Each one had a daughter, an adult daughter that they needed to marry off. And legend has it that Rabbi Meir married the daughter of the messenger, Rabbi Don, and Rabbi Don married the daughter of Rabbi Meir. I saw this in two places, Mo'adim L'Simcha, by Rabbi Hollander. And I also have another very good sefer, I have really three swam to record the story. It's called like Penine Yimei Shavuos. Chassidisha, a liquid of Chassidisha, different veritlach, and he has 2-3 pages for recording the entire story. The story is a little bit different. Okay, so to make a long story short, there was a debate, and obviously the mayor won the debate, and part of the debate, the miracles happened, and the king killed this Koimer. And out of shevach v'hoidah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what has happened, for the miracle and for the success, Rabbi Meir composed a song, a shira, to give shevach v'hoidah that they survived. And that song somehow made its way back over the Sambathyon to Rabbi Don, and it was introduced in the Varmiza. And
he couldn't make it, but the male did.
What?
He couldn't make it back.
I told you, no one really knows. A lot of these things are very...
Read the statement.
We go on, probably, you can probably find it online. Find it online. Again, you're going to find different versions, something along those lines. But basically, the sort is, it was composed as a shevach, a praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the miracle, for surviving this pogrom, this horrible pogrom, which was a sakana for Klal Yisrael. What happened to this group of people on the other side of the Sambathyon? No one knows. Do they still exist there? They're beyond the cover of radar? Look about the plane. No one found the plane. Who knows?
Maybe it landed
on Sambathyon, the Bermuda Triangle. Listen, who knows, right? Who knows? How could it be in this day and age you can't find a plane disappears? Who knows what's going on out there? We don't know. These people disappear. They're still there. Is this story even true? Is it a legend? We have maybe Zapikurs and say it's not true. We have Masara. Whatever it is, but this shir was composed by Rabbi Meir, the Shliach Tzibur, out of Shevach V'Oidot HaKadosh Baruch Hu for allowing him to survive. Okay, now, that's the basic Mechab. Now, I want to tell you something, let me just jump into something, and a lot of things I want to discuss, one thing I want to jump into right now. Now, this is something new to me, I never saw this, it made an impression upon me. This Yisod, I saw this in the Simchas Mo'adim, in the name of a sefer called Ziv HaMo'adim. I never heard of this. Ziv HaMinhagim. Ziv HaMinhagim. I meant to look it up on Hebrew Books Online if they can find a copy of this book. It sounds like a fascinating book. Ziv HaMinhagim says, let me give you a background to what it says. There's a very big debate we're going to discuss in a few moments. When exactly do we recite Akdamas? Do we recite Akdamas before the Kohen makes the bracha before we open up the Sefer Torah, or do we recite Akdamas in the middle of the Kriya Satara? The Baal Kori lanes one pasuk, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe b'midbar Sinai, or
Bachodesh
Hashlish Litzeis Meishol b'yom Hazeh Beres Mitzrayim Bohu Midbar Sinai, and then right then and there the Baal Kori begins to recite Akdamas. Big debate. The Maharil says you're supposed to recite it in the middle of Kriya Satara after you lay in the first pasuk. The Taz strongly disagrees. He says it's a hefsek, you know how to do it, and you should recite it before the Kohen makes the bracha. We'll discuss that in a few moments. This is something that's new to me, and I made a version of me. The Ziv Hamadim says, why did the Maharil, was he mistaken that it should be said in the middle of Kriya Satara? So again, we're missing some of the background. I don't know the details, but this story, this event took place during the Tkufa of the Crusades. It was a generation before. The Crusades didn't happen overnight. There was a lot going on. We know that the Crusades took place in Shavuos. The first Crusade, we actually mentioned the date, it took place during Shavuos. It could be that this Shevach was also, that's what it seems to be saying, was also instituted part of the Nusach HaTfilah after the time of the Crusades, as Shevach v'Hoidah, that people survived the Crusades. Fascinating. On Tisha B'Av, we mourn those who died. We mourn the Churban. But there were survivors. And Al Pi Derech HaTeva, no one would have survived. That's how dangerous it was. There were survivors. And the Crusades happened during Kriyas HaTorah. Would you believe that? I think it says that in the Kinnis, study of the Kinnis, history of the Kinnis. It was during Kriyas HaTorah the Crusaders entered into the Beis HaKnesses and people were murdered. Now again, the Rav Meir B'Shlich Tzibur wrote this before the Crusades. But somehow the Ziv HaMoadim says they're connected. There's a connection between two. Therefore, as a zecher of what happened, since something significant happened in the middle of Kriya Satara, they were misaken to read Akdamas in the middle of Kriya Satara to remind the Olam of what happened during Kriya Satara. It's an amazing idea. Okay, we're missing half of the details. But a very raw sketch opens up for us in a very big way why this very bizarre thing we do in a very bizarre way. We don't actually do, most of us, and almost all of us, don't actually read it during Kriya Satara, but we read it right before you make the bracha. You take off the mantle, and you the Gabbai calls Zavya, Zavya, again, Yoshe calls up the Kohen, and as the Kohen is about to make the bracha, you right away stop and you read, which is not so simple, because according to the Taz, that's also a no-no. According to the Taz, you're not allowed to do that either. Ein ma'avirin al ha-mitzvos. Once you call up the Kohen, and the Kohen is standing, and you've taken off the mantle, how dare you be mafsik and start leaning akdamas? That's not proper. Ein ma'avirin. According to the Taz, akdamas is read like in Megillas Rus. Like in Megillas Rus. You finish Shacharis, you say Hallel, and now you say Akdamas. And now you'll first open up the Aron by Yibin Soha Aron. To do what we're doing is a Pshara. It's a compromise between, it's a Minog Yisrael, a compromise between the Maril, Yishalein in the middle of Kriya Satara, and the Taz that says Yishalein it before you even take out the Sefer Torah. As a compromise, we take out the Sefer Torah, we take off the mantle, we call up the Kohen, and before the Kohen even makes the bracha, we recite the Akdamas. Why in the world would you do that? What's going on over here? The answer is, the point to keep in mind, this is what Ziv HaMoadim, there is something that we're missing, there's some information, but something very significant happened in Klal Yisrael, a very big Yeshua salvation, a miracle happened in the middle of Kriya Satara. And to remind ourselves of this event, we will misakin to give Shevach HaRadot HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a Hayro Asha in the middle of Kriya Satara. Amazing, amazing idea of how far it goes with things that we do to stimulate ourselves to remind ourselves of what happened and the need to give Shevach HaRadot, even though according to Halacha, it's not ideal. Okay, so this is one important idea. Now let's discuss now the idea of when exactly we lane. And one of the issues, according to the Maril, the ideal time is to say it after you lay the first pasuk. Why after the first pasuk? Let's finish the aliyah. So the answer is because once you already lay three psukim, then it would constitute a hefsek between the end of the mitzvah and the bracha acharona. When you get an aliyah, you make two brachas, the bracha rishon and bracha acharona. Once you finish the mitzvah, you mechuyev to make the bracha acharona immediately. So the problem is, so if we were to lay three psukim, there would be an obligation to make the bracha. You would not be allowed to be mafsik and recite a shira of akdamas. On the other hand, to lay it after you make the bracha, before you recite the first pasuk, would also constitute a hefsik, because the hefsik between the first and the bracha and the first pasuk. So what would you suggest? So why not do it after two psukim? Why wait? Why wait only after one pasuk? Let's do two psukim. So he excites, because according to many we don't pass like this. Many the Goinim, there's a sheet of Goinim and Rishonim that you yoitzer kriya satori even with two psukim. We halacha l'maisa will never make an aliyah unless we lay at least three psukim. That's a halacha we accept, but that's only one of two opinions. There's another minority opinion that you can be yoitzer kriya satori after two psukim. So if we lay in two psukim, the same reason why we're not going to wait until after laying three psukim, it's not a good idea to wait to lay in after three psukim, because three psukim you finish the mitzvah and you mechuyev to recite the bracha acharon, unless you want to lay more. If you want to continue laying from the Torah more, that's no problem. But if you're not going to be laying psukim in the Torah, you have an obligation to recite the bracha acharon. You're not allowed to be mafsik. So the same way we don't do it after three psukim, we would not be allowed to do it after two psukim. But after one pasuk, we have not yet finished the mitzvah, and it's not a hefsek from the first bracha to the first pasuk. So that would be the ideal time to recite akdamas after one pasuk.
But we don't know that this is the ritual.
We have no idea, right? A lot of this is—it's all been lost from us.
I think everybody right. Does tefillah lachbach lachavakuf.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. Right. Yisiv Piskam. Yisiv Piskam, we say after one pasuk. What they did, right. Okay.
Even though it's not.
Yisiv, on the second day of Shavuos, we recite Yisiv Piskam. Yisiv Piskam is the parallel, is another Shiva for the for Agdamas. And there you say it after the first pasuk. The first pasuk. So you see, so why is that different? It's a very good question.
All right. It's not, I mean, after it's the same level as.
Torah.
Nevertheless,
you do. It's right. What initially was on. So there's no question. The Maril. The earliest source for this thing is the Maril, and they're right. Svardim don't say it. Svardim and Timonim. Very early. The Maril is like a Rishon almost. What? I'm not sure. I don't know.
After the Crusades?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know. Exactly. The Maril. When did the Maril live? I don't know the answer. I don't know. But the Maril is very, very early. It's the earliest source. Maril says it should be done after the first pasuk. And there's another interesting reason given. I see cites the Moad and Lasimcha. Why after the first pasuk? Because where did this event? Where did this whole debate, this miracle, this episode take place? It took place on the other side of the Sambathion River, which was in the desert. It was known as the desert, the Midbar. So we ramez b'chodesh hashlishi. Let's say it's the Yisrael Yerushalayim b'yom hazebohu midbar sinai. So we want to be ramez. It took place in the midbar, so we would have to wait until we recite the first pasuk. Okay, that's another interesting idea. Now let me give you another reason why we recite after the first pasuk. We have to remember we know this in the Gemara. This is nafkamin lahalacha. The next reason we know in the Gemara, the time of the Gemara, there used to be something called a miturgamon. I'm a Turgamon. And if you want to see them in action, you have to just go to the Kaisel. Go to the Kaisel on a Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael. You can always find at least one minyan where they have a Turgamon. Where you lay, it takes forever. If you ever watch, you lay the Pasuk. You don't just have a Balkorei, you have a different person who's in charge of the Targum. What? By the Kaisel? Okay, you have to look. I haven't seen either, but I haven't been there. I've only been by the Kais of Shabbos maybe once my whole life, so I haven't looked. I've been told that you can find these type of minyan if you look hard enough by the Kais. But how does it work? The Gemara's time Chazal, the same. You lay in the pasuk, and after you lay in each pasuk, there's a miturgamon. There's another person that stands by the bima that reads the targum. he reads the targum of the pasuk. That's how it is. And you do one at a time. Some of them lay entire regular targum, some targum Yoinus and Ben Uziel, some do both. Maybe some even do targum Yerushalmi. There are three major targumim. They read the targum. And this was the way Kriyas HaTorah was done originally. It appears by everyone way, way back. For whatever reason, we don't do this anymore. Targum, we don't recite targum. There's one time that we do it. And when do we do it? We do it on the night of Shavuos. Akdamos is the introduction of the Targum. And in fact, part of the Akdamos translates, it could be at the end, I'm studying the text inside in detail, but the Akdamos was the introduction of the Meturgamon. So what we're doing Shavuos night, Akdamos, we all realize, is written in Aramaic. Why is it in Aramaic? So the common reasons you'll find why it's in Aramaic is because the Malachim shouldn't get jealous. It's a beautiful song, and the Malachim are very sensitive to Shiva. That's what they do. That's the Parnassa. So the Malachim get jealous when they see that someone is taking over their Parnassa, singing Shiva. The other reason is because it's described as the debate between the Jews and the non-Jews. There's a lot of discussion about what was going to happen to the Umos HaOlam, and there's a non. So we don't want the Goyim to hear that we're plotting their demise. So you say in Aramaic language, which the non-Jews do not understand. That's the common reason why Akdamos is written in Aramaic. But there's another reason why it's in Aramaic. It's because this was the introductory remarks of the Meturgamon. Every single pasuk was translated. The Baal Kori reads the pasuk, and then the Meturgamon translates the pasuk. On the Yom Tov of Shavuos, before the Meturgamon would translate the first pasuk, he would recite, give a little bit of an elaboration. And in fact, that's why he begins with the word Arshus Agdamus Smil, before I actually open up and translate Vayidaber Vayihiba Chayid Hashlishi, let me give a little introduction to the Tzibur. He was like the Rav that gave a translation. Agdamus Smilin Vishara Yush Shusa Avla Shakilna Harmon Unushusa. First, I want to take permission from the Tzibur to translate the Torah and give you an introduction. So, really, what we're doing on the night of Shavuos is at least for one pasuk, we are preserving the original tradition and Klal Yisrael to be in the midst of Kriyas HaTorah with a one who reads the Torah and a person who actually translates the Torah. And Akdamish was just an elaborate introduction, but they were talking before we actually would translate the pasuk. Now that has a very big nafkmin halacha, and indeed the Moadim L'Simcha in a footnote says that it could be that some people do this. Who in our shuls reads Akdamos? Probably 99.99% of the time, the Baal Kori. Whoever is going to read the Torah is going to be the one that's going to practice the Akdamos and is going to have a covenant of saying Akdamos from the Tzibur. But In the Gemara Masechta Megillah, the Gemara is very explicitly clear that the Meturgamon is not allowed to be the Baal Kore. The one who is the Kore, the one who reads the Torah, is not the one who says the Targum. Even if you have a person, a professional, and he knows the Targum Baal Peh, they have to be two different people. Why? The Gemara says, no one should make a mistake and think that the Targum was written in the Torah. Just like when you get an Aliyah and you say Baruch, when you say the first Bracha, so you're supposed to do one of two things. Either you're supposed to turn your face to the side and close your eyes, or close the Sefer Torah, so no one should make a mistake and think that the brachos are written in the Torah. The brachos are written on the Bima. In my day, they never had brachos on the Bima. This is a new thing. Yeah. This is a new thing. The brachos, but no one should make a mistake and think that the brachos are written in the Torah. So you have to close the Sefer Torah. The Gemara Megillah says this in regard to the Targum. The Meturgum one, it cannot be the Torah, because people are then going to think that the Targum was written in the Torah. So Lamai Nachman, if the reading of Akdamos is a token fulfillment of the Meturgum one translating the Pasuk, the Baal Kori says the Pasuk, and now the Meturgum one is going to translate the Pasuk. And before he says the Pasuk for the first time, he gives a little embellishment. He gives some Akdama. So the one that's Akdama is the Meturgamon. The Meturgamon, the one that's Akdama, should not be the Baal Kore. Fascinating. So indeed it appears that there were some people that were makbid on this. The Rav, he says Akdamos, and the Baal Kori lays down the Torah. They cannot be the same person. He's the Meturgamon. The Baal Akdamos is the Meturgamon. The Gemara Megillah says the Meturgamon can't be the one that says the parasha, because you shouldn't make that mistake. So this is something that's very, very... What? That's what it's true. The different people. Agdamas and the Balkarin. You don't mix the two together. It definitely opens up. It definitely opens up. Okay, another interesting thing about Agdamas, someone wants to say, someone
do it after the first person. If you do it before Lainey,
yeah,
the Balkara can say.
Okay, right. That's obviously why. We don't do it. Everyone follows the Taz. 99% of the shuls follow the Taz. No one does it after the first Pasuk. They do what? They do it in the middle of Lainey?
Yeah.
After the first Pasuk? The Hasidim?
I never saw that.
Doesn't seem so.
Never saw that.
It seems even the Hasidim followed the Taz. I'm sure you'll find the shul. You'll definitely find somewhere where they're going to lay Nakdamas after the first Pasuk. And there,
I did see that after the Kohen makes the bracha, then they say
okay.
No, that's for sure no good.
That
is off the charts. That's, no one allows you to make, that would be a hefsek. After the first Pasuk. They probably said the Pasuk very quickly and then they said Agdamas. But after the bracha before. And also there's a hakpada, you should close that. And because of this reason, there is a hakpada to close Sefer Torah. The Sefer Torah should be covered. Even if you go to a shul, they do say Agdamas after the first Pasuk. The Baal Kore will say the first Pasuk. And then they're going to say Agdamas. But first he's supposed to close the Sefer Torah. And seemingly if you do that, someone else should be the one that says the Agdamas. Okay, then there's another interesting minhag, is one of the chavivas of Agdamas is going with the nigun. It's a very unique nigun. This nigun is the nigun that is used for the Rishus. The Rishus on the Simchas Torah. It's a beautiful nigun. Everyone knows this special nigun. Now that we know that it's the Rishus, this also touches upon another very interesting topic. Why there's a special chadilos in Agdamas before Matan Torah? Derech Eretz Kadmo LaTorah. Okay, and some even learned that the Shabbos before Shavuos is called Shabbos Derech Eretz. What is Derech Eretz? What is the most fundamental form of Derech Eretz? Netilas Rishus. Before you get up, every someone can make the Joshua Rishus. You say Rishus tomorrow, the Asha, the Kehila. Yeah, you make Rishus with the Malachim. The Noisim Rishus Zela Hakdish LiYotzer Benachas Shuach. That is why the beginning of Agdamas begins Agdamas Milin. Before my words, before my opening words, Avla Shakilna Harmon Urishus. Harmon is another word for permission. The first thing I'm going to do before I open up my mouth and express praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu about the Torah, I'm going to be Neitel Rishus, take permission from the people here in the community in the Beis HaKnesses. So this is an expression of Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. Before you learn the Torah, Makabal the Torah, the Aseres HaDibros, the Ereshit thing is, you have to be Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. And for that reason, we take this nigun, and we use this nigun every time we're noitel rishus before we call up the chasen Torah, the chasen bereishis.
So the nigun of the rishusim came from the nigun of Agdamas.
Absolutely, it's to remind us of Agdamas, because Agdamas is rishus. Derech Eretz Kadmo LaTorah.
The rishus in Hakafas came later.
Of course, right. So why do they borrow the nigun of the rishus?
Been very mamish by them. They remembered the rishus because they said it every day. To them, Agdamas was big. It had to do with the Torah.
Right.
In the Torah.
And
it also.
But it's more, it's any time you take Neitel, the prototype of being Neitel Rishus, Derech Eretz, Kadmo LaTorah, is Agdamas. And it has a beautiful, its own nigun. Any time else you want to be Neitel Rishus, we only do it all one time a year. And Simchas Torah, it's called the Rishus. The Rishus, we call the Rishus of the Sanhedrin and this. So why are we using that nigun? Well, you can't find another nigun. Mordechai and David doesn't have another nigun for us. Shlomo Kalbach can't come up with another nigun because the prototype of the prototype of Netilas, some will tell you that Shlomo Kalbach is bigger. He's bigger than Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Netilas Rishus, the prototype is Derech Eretz Kadmo LaTorah. It's not just it's just one of the expressions. This is the Iker. The Iker is the first two lines of the Agdamas. Okay, let's discuss some other inyanim about what about saying Agdamas the second day of Shavuos. No one says. No. Then you say Yitziv Piskam. But the simile, there are those who argue that you should say it the second day. But the response to them is
maybe the actual thing is they only said it the first day.
Right. So how do we know that?
Maybe
Sake of the Yoma. Right. It's only so the nusach itself extends. The point is, it's not just a shiur. The nusach, the last line, is only one line. Utzvi v'isra bon umesar lon. He has given us the last words. Umesar lon oiraisa. He has given us the Torah. So it's only the last word. It's the Aseres HaDibros. So exactly, it's an introduction to the Aseres HaDibros. So you can't go say that Sake of the Yoma, it was instant Chutz Li'aretz, so you should say both days. No!
Make a guess. Yeah. You were saying that when they did it, that was like middle of Korea, they did it before the Aseres HaDibros.
Right! Well, no, they did it, though. Everyone, it appears that they only did it after the first Pasuk. That's what it appears in all the writings. The Maril, it was never done. Yeah. After the first pasuk, there's nothing else but the first pasuk, and it's explicit. Umesar lonaraisa. It's important to note that it was composed because it's very interesting. Because generally, anything that we do on the first day, we do on the second day. Sake of the Yoma. So why is this minhag only done on the first day, not done on the second day? Why do you only stay up the first? Someone says, why don't you only stay up the first night of Shavuos? So why don't you stay up the second night of Shavuos? Okay, so is there really something to that? Is there really meaning to that? Many people have questioned this. I heard many years ago an answer. I don't have any sources for you, but minhagim, there's no din seker diyoma on minhagin. Anything that is a minhag is not on the level of there's a mitzos, the takonos, the deraisos. On the minhag, there's no such thing as sake of the yom. You only eat cheese blintzes once. You only eat cheese blintzes both days. On minhagim, there's no such thing. That's why tikkun leil shavuos, it's a minhag. We discussed this. Where does it come from? Is it really necessary? Then it's a minhag. But you don't find tikkun leil shavuos the second night. You don't find this. This, they're putting... Continue the momentum. It's not really just a late night shiur. No one's staying up the whole night. They put up the signs, come to a shiur. What are you doing anyway? So instead of sitting home and reading the newspaper, so come to a shiur, 11 o'clock at night. You're not going to work tomorrow anyway, so you come to a shiur. It's not an inyan of staying up the whole night, because there is no such minhag. There is no. Make new minhagim. There is no minhag. Minhagim, you don't do 2 days. So here also, this minhag, you don't do 2 days. The minhag of saying Agdamus, well, you say, what's so terrible? It's a beautiful shiur to say 2 days. There's no such thing as doing a minhag. So you saw the Yisodit, you don't do minig twice. Can I just tell you this? Going back, there's a very funny story with the Shagas Ari. Shagas Ari was the goin shul, every bar mitzvah boy, you know, it's the minig Yisrael. Bar mitzvah is a pshetel. Ruba, they say a pshetel from the Shagas Ari. London, you know, he represents. So the Shagas Ari became a rav when he came from his community in Mitz. What's Mitz in English? What's the name?
Mets.
New York Mets, right? Not the team. Mets. He became the Rav in Metz. When he became the Rav, the custom of the community was to say Akdamos, like the Taz, before the bracha, like what we do with Taz. So the Shai Agisai wanted desperately. He waged the war. You know, Rabban only have a few chances to make Muhammad for the Balabatim. So one of the major wars today with the Balabatim is to change the minog from before. To do like the Maril after the first Pasuk. And the Balabatim did not let. He waged a major war and he lost. The Rav lost the war, the Balabatim won. This is the way we do it, and the Zehu don't rock the boat. So after he lost, he said, this is the Shagas Ari says, Halavai, my Balabatim should be so strong in preserving the Minuk. Halavai, they should channel their zeal in preserving the minhag to also be mekayim the aseres hadibros. I don't see that they have such a drive, zeal, enthusiasm to mekayim the aseret lo sirtzach lo tinaf lo tignoif when it comes to the aseret adivos, like they're concerned about the minuk. You have to have priorities.
It's very interesting. The Chabad does not say yakamis, but they print it in the siddur.
They put it in the siddur.
Printed in the siddur. They all know about it.
They don't say it. The svardim, the real svardim, and the real temanim also do not.
They don't have it.
They do not.
Usually
they don't say it. Usually they print.
The svardim do not.
The story didn't happen.
Because they didn't even know about it.
Oh,
they
didn't
even
know
about it.
In the wrong time.
Okay.
The Crusades were much after the...
Way after.
The Crusades were 1096. 1096, the first crusade. The other ones did not have this. The second crusade had a major effect in Klal Yisrael, but the other after the second crusade, it didn't affect Klal Yisrael near anywhere as much as the first two crusades. The first crusade for sure, the second crusade as well, but the other one they were a total of 10. Right, they told of 10. They were very schwach. As the time went on, it didn't peter out. It was very schwach. Okay, the only last thing I want to mention is that this is considered to be the mother of all piyutim.
Who?
Akdamas. The mother of all piyutim is Akdamas. It is the prototype. It is the mother. Obviously, you all know that. And tof aleph, tof means, you know, you go from the last letter of the aleph base to the beginning of the aleph base, the cycle, the repetition. It's considered. Why is it considered to be? What was the? I don't know if it was the first Python. It could be the Kalia. It's likely the Kalia was before. Rav Meir was before the first Crusade. The Kalia, L'chora, Rashi quotes the Kalia. Rashi. So Rashi lived. Rashi was 56 years old during the first Crusade, and Rashi quotes the Kalia. So that means the Kalir had to have been younger than Rashi, at least, if not 200 years, if not 500 years.
The Kalir came in the 800s.
So we know, if not even the Kalir, we don't know when he lived. The Kalir is one of the biggest mystery men. He's a mystery man. He spans, we have records of him going back a thousand. Can you imagine a person? Where in history can you find a person that is, when he lived this 1,000-year period, we don't know when he lived?
Eo.
Okay. Eo is even better. We don't even know if he lived all together. We don't even know if he lived all together yet. But Eov is not as such, because Eov is more ancient. Eov, even the latest record of when Eov lived, is the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, Shlomo HaMelech. So we don't have no record. That goes back. But the Kalir is, relatively speaking, in modern times. Okay, relatively speaking, modern times. And yet there's a thousand-year period. Earl, someone said he was a Tan. He was Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Rashbi. He's the Elazar. They go to his caver on Lag BaOmer. Rabbi Elazar is Rabbi Eliezer. He turned into Eliezer. Many say that's a stretch. To say he's the Tana Rabbi Eliezer, it's a stretch. So they want to say he lived later on. The latest records have him the time of Rashi, right before Rashi died. So obviously the Paitanim and the Meir Shliach Tzibur also was right before Rashi. A generation, clearly one generation or generation and a half before Rashi. Okay, but it is considered to be the mother of all piyutim, more than the Kalir. Why? It's the only piyut that is recited when the Sefer Torah is munach al habim, and that really says it all. All of the piyutim, they're beautiful, they're wonderful, but you don't give it the kavod to say it when the Sefer Torah is munach al habim. Can you imagine Sefer Torah is munach al habim? It's ready to go, and you sing Shel the Kashu. That says, so there is what to be studied and understood. If a person wants to study piyut, and there are websites devoted to the study of piyutim today. I mean, the svarim, but the starting point, the model of all piyutim is the piyut of Akdamas. All right, with that we will conclude.